What's going on, Earners? Welcome to EYL University, the number one place for business education. Shadi, tell them what we're bringing.
Yes, EYL University already has over 100 past webinars from all areas of business. It includes weekly webinars from industry leaders. It includes access to our investment Facebook group, movie club, our book club. It also includes access to monthly financial planning calls with yours truly. But what has been added has access to MG the Mortgage Guy's Home Buyer's Blueprint, over 14 hours, everything you need to know as far as the home buying process is concerned. And also what has been added is access to our monthly group chat call. Right. So once a month, me, Troy, and the whole team is going to let you in on our personal plays, our portfolio, what we're doing, and more. So all of that, we are running for a special promo code of 70% off for a limited time only. So head to EYLUniversity.com right now and take advantage.
You know how this works. Don't wait. Don't hesitate. We'll see you on the other side.
My graduates from my school being Forbes, backdrop.
Backdrop.
F*** a mic drop. Backdrop.
Backdrop. All right, guys, welcome back. EYL.
Yeah.
South Beach edition, but this is Uptown edition, really. Yeah. This is legendary edition, man. If you follow us, you know that, you know, hip hop really raised us. We talk about it all the time. We always reference all of these rappers and everything. It's part of our DNA. And of course, one of the biggest ever to do it, the legendary Fat Joe.
Yeah.
So we didn't know, we're in Miami, and we didn't know that this was actually even going to come about. This happened just on the fly. Shout out to Tribble.
Shout out to Tribble. Shout out to Nicole.
For making this happen. Yep. So, I mean, it really needs no introduction, but I'll give a quick rundown. 30 years in the game. Started with Digging in the Crates, I believe, in 1990. First album, Respect, came out in 1993.
Bro, can we just like pay homage to that? I had a Diamond D record. I had the CD. Diamond D CD with Lord Finesse.
I was in Diamond's album. I'm in every single ad-lib on his album.
Word?
I'm the guy in the background going, yo, that's that shit. And when he talked to the girl, and I'm like, yo, what's up? And she's like, yo, chill. You know, every ad lib on Diamond's album is Fat Joe.
Yo, this guy. I told him when he was coming up, I'm like, yo, we both in the Bronx, born in the Bronx, raised in Westchester. But I was like, for a while, I used to be like, yo, KRS is the illest in the Bronx. Like, there's no denying it.
That's his favorite rapper.
That was my favorite rapper. I'm like, yo, nobody's better. I don't care what y'all talking about, Rakim. Yo, KRS is the illest. And then this guy comes. You got a flow, Joe, and now he's became the king of the Bronx. And I'm like, damn. He's like, you got me KRS one day. I'm like, please.
That's my mentor. That's my idol. You know what I'm saying? I rap because of KRS one. You know what I'm saying? The first time I ever heard him, I remember one time, the first time I ever heard Consciousness was out of KRS. I hopped the train, Prospect Avenue, went in the back car, and I listened in my Walkman, and he was like, airplanes flying, overseas people dying. Politicians lying. I'm trying not to escape, but hit the problem head on. And I was just, he just opened up some shit in my mind where I had never known Consciousness before that. And, he's the guy that made me want to rap. Him and LL Cool J, they both equal idols for different reasons.
Yeah.
But if it wasn't for them two, I would have never rapped.
So there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, Fat Joe. I can go on and on, but we're going to talk about it during the interview. So, first and foremost, thank you for joining us. Appreciate it, brother.
Thank you, my brother.
Yeah, for sure. So let's get into it, man. You know, this is a business show, as we were saying before. So the conversation is going to be a little different probably than most of the conversations that you have, because it's going to go deeper than rap. So when I look at you, I don't just look at you as, you know, a rap mogul. I look at you as a variety of different things, but one of the greatest A&Rs that's ever lived, and one of the greatest heirs for talent.
Not giving enough credit for that, too.
No, it's a fact. I mean, when you look at Big Pun, rest in peace, when you look at Remy Ma, Kool & Dre, DJ Khaled, to name a few, Tony Sunshine.
Scott Storch. Bryson Tiller. We was early with Bryson Tiller.
What was your involvement?
Pitbull. I took Pitbull's demo and got him his first record deal.
That was crazy, because he's supposed to sign with Murder, Inc. first.
Who, Pitbull?
Yeah. I remember Irv was trying to get him to go over there.
No, he was trying to sign Rick Ross.
Rick Ross, okay.
And also, I could have signed Rick Ross, too. But a lot of mistakes I made. But Pitbull, I got him his deal.
You know what I'm saying? How'd that come about?
Trick Daddy, I was out here in Miami on Super Bowl weekend, caught his fucking CD at the flea market. I was playing it the whole time I was out here. I went to Atlantic. I gave it to Craig Comer. He signed Trick Daddy like 2 days later.
So we'll talk about all of those stories, but all right.
You talking about my eye for talent. I'm just trying to let the people know.
Yeah.
How did that develop? Because most rappers, they're not really on it like that. They focus on their career. They might find one or two people from the neighborhood.
Maybe.
That's obvious in using the neighborhood. Yeah. Like even
I'm indebted and I'm in love with the culture. You know, coming up from the Bronx like you two, we're very unique in where this is where hip hop was born.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's different sections of the Bronx, but fortunately for me, I was born in the section that created hip hop. So I would watch Melly Mel and Grandmaster Flash play pickup games of basketball. I would watch Ruby Dee, the first Latino MC, play softball with his brothers. So I was around Little Rodney C. I was around Sha Rock. I was around the whole hip hop shit started in my hood. Oskarski, Love Bug Starsky was from my hood. All of them was from my hood. And so I'm indebted to the culture. So if I hear an artist that's incredible and she says, Fat Joe, I would never sign to you. I don't want to sign to you. I would give her names of people that could sign her because I feel like I owe it to the people in hip hop to hear greatness.
So, all right. How did it first come about as far as Terror Squad becoming a record label and signing? Was Big Pun the first person to sign the Terror Squad?
I think Armageddon was.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay.
Got that. So yeah.
Armageddon was. And so Armageddon, just like me and Diamond D, where I tell you I did every ad-lib, Armageddon did every ad-lib on the Represent album. So I was at Jazzy J Studio in the Bronx. That was a legendary studio. Grand Poobah used to do his albums. Diamond did his albums, everybody. So I did my album there, and Armageddon lived around the corner. So he was like the little kid that wanted to rap, to be in the studio. He was there all the way with me. And then he got on the first album, and he was my brother ever since. And then Pun was... You know, Pun was actually the logo. You know what I'm saying? He was the person to take Terror Squad as a record label to the next level.
So, and then Remy Ma comes after that, obviously.
That was crazy. Oh my gosh. What was it like for you from the Bronx? You got this fat Puerto Rican guy. First of all, you got Fat Joe. You're hearing Fat Joe's the realest ever in the game. Y'all know that.
We know the stories.
Besides the fact that y'all know the stories.
We know the stories.
Right?
We know
then
the stories.
Then he signs the fatter Puerto Rican that's spitting some crazy. Yo. And then they sign the hottest chick that's spitting some shit. What's that like for you guys in the
Bronx? Nah, I was watching the whole thing, just loving it. Because I remember when they did the Creep with Me. And like moves to the scene, there's all the kids in the streets call me Don Cartagena.
I'm going to tell you another one, bro. When we went to the Puerto Rican Day Parade.
Ooh.
I have y'all on tape, bro. Like, I'm watching y'all on the float. Y'all got y'all Angie's on the float with y'all. And then y'all went even further. Y'all walked through Central Park. I was like, yo, that's Fat Joe. They would kiss. They would stop. Like, we like recorded it as it's happening. I'm like, yo, this is crazy. It was a moment, man. It was a moment.
I never got like, he's Latino or he's Puerto Rican Joe. Like, when I grew up, it was Joey. And Joey Crack, and it's the same shit. Like, I don't know. You know, black people ain't look at me like he's Spanish. And it was always like, that's Joey. You know what I'm saying? And it wasn't until I got in junior high that I had to go to school. And I write about it in my book. I got a book I'm writing now. And when I went to junior high, they didn't understand it. So I went to an even blacker neighborhood. So if my neighborhood was 99% black, I went to a 99%. 0.9 black hood where the Spanish niggas ain't have no juice. And I'm walking up in there, V-bomber. Yo, what's up, y'all?
Only jacket
the line. Fuck is good? They're like, oh, no, we ain't jacking that. We ain't nah. Where the fuck this alien come from? So it's different because I grew up a baby.
Yeah.
I'm born in my projects. I was born in Bronx, Lebanon, across the street from where Larry Davis shot the cops. That's where I was born. And they brought me to the projects. And I've always been Joey, Fat Joey from Forest. And that's it. So there, they know me since a baby. And they knew, yo, he's going to be a bad little motherfucker. Dude, you can watch a little kid in kindergarten and know he's going to be a bad man. The guy doing the real flying kicks in the back. He's a piece of shit.
Smacking people in the back of the head.
Yeah, yeah. So they looking
sit
at,
down.
Yeah, they looking at me like, oh, he's a piece of shit. Like he's the most likely not to succeed.
Most likely.
And so, you know, they was cool. Like my hood was like, you know, that's Joey.
Yeah.
But then when I got suspended from so many schools in that neighborhood, they sent me my grandmother's neighborhood, and that was like a, you know, I got bullied every day. I got beat up every day by 20 different guys every single day, and I fought them all every day, every day. So people could tell you about getting bullied. I got bullied when I went to school every day, got beat up every day, and fought them every day. Nobody can, you can research this all you want. They will tell you no different. Yo, he fought 20 dudes every day. Thanksgiving, black eye, big lip. Christmas, black eye, big lip. Like, it was like, because truthfully, they didn't understand, like, how could this Spanish dude be in this neighborhood and trying to move the way he moved? And, you know, and you know, I guess they had to get used to it. You know what I'm saying? And now I go over there and I'm like a king. You know what I'm saying? They love me. They see me. They proud of me. They, yo, Joe, what's up, bro? Yo, you know, and that's just the way it is.
So that was pun that his, like, when that Spanish salsa. Oh, no.
Yeah, that was pun. That was pun with 100%. Now, it was me on an executive level.
Yeah.
Where Loud Records told me, yo, you get a budget, right? Finance, what's the name of your shit? Let's get this going, right? So, you get a budget, right? And when you growing up, we ain't have shit. We from the projects, we ain't got nothing. So when you become a rapper and some white dudes are giving you $1.5 million, you're like, fuck that. We tricking this shit off. Like, yeah, we ain't got no sense of a budget, but there really is a budget, right? So when they gave us the budget, Pun had passed, but he had made that record 100%. What you talking to? Steve Rifkin, the radio team, the video team, everybody told me this record wasn't going to go. It was like, yo, there is no Puerto Ricans in Memphis, Tennessee. There is no Puerto Ricans in Atlanta, Georgia. There is, like, people do not, other than New York got Puerto Ricans, you ain't there. You know, so I knew it wasn't going to blow. I knew it wasn't going to be like a still not a player. I knew it wasn't, but I still spent the $500,000 on the video. I still spent the money on the video and the radio, and that was just simply because I knew we would be talking about this 20 years later. Yeah. It was groundbreaking. And I knew Pun was the biggest hero for Latinos in hip hop. And we had to send him off that way.
Yeah.
So I spent that money knowing I wasn't getting that money back. But I did it for, like, you know, our legacy and culture and shit like
that. Yeah, I still don't. I be trying to say the chorus every time. But I know the rhythm of it. That's what I come in. So from the executive side, because you're an artist first, right? Who are you looking to for guidance at this point? Is it like Russell Simmons at the time? Is it Puff? Who's giving you the guidance on the executive side?
Nobody gave me nothing. Nobody. And I was cool with Puff. I actually knew Puff Daddy when he had a see-through chain. So Puff Daddy is probably my motivation.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've never looked at nobody through a jealous lens. I've always looked at people with inspiration. So if it came tomorrow, I'd do a podcast. I don't know if we call this podcast, whatever we want to call it, right? So I do the big show. If you make $100 million, you may have never met Fat Joe, and I am cracking aces for you. Book! Yeah! And you don't even have a clue, right? But I'm like, if they got $100 million, I could get $100
million. Right.
And that's how I've always looked at everything. So Puff Daddy used to run up on me. You know, I sold drugs before I rap. And so with me, Puff Daddy used to chase me and my Beamers and Benzes, and I got ice on, and I'm looking like this. And he's like, yo, crack, what's up? And this, next thing I know, he's a billionaire.
Yeah.
You get what I'm saying?
Yeah,
so he was smart. He knew the branding business before everybody else. He knew how to make certain moves. Puff Daddy took everything that we thought was fun, and it was always business. So Puff Daddy would throw a party, and we like getting drunk and thinking we having fun. Meanwhile, he got the president of Viacom on there. He got the owner of the Yankees in there. He working the motherfuckers to get that bread that we can't see while we're adding to the, you know, I got Fat Joe, Latinos. I got this one. I got that one, that one. And he just finessing it.
Yeah.
You know, so he was ahead of time with his branding. But me personally, nobody ever gave me help. The only person, the only executive I could tell you that allowed me to do what I wanted to do was Steve Rifkin at Loud Records. He helped me sign Big Pun. He gave me the money. He funded my ideas, my creativity. You know, he funded it. He put up the money for it. And for that, I'm forever in debt to him.
You know? So how, because we always hear about, you know, these record labels, especially back then with Rough Riders and, you know, Cash Money and all of that. Like, how did it work at that time? And what's the difference between that time and now? Like, did you, you had a record label. What does that really mean? Is it really a record label or is it like a subsidiary of Sony?
It's a subsidiary of Sony. And it's, it, and it's all, you know, if you want to talk about, you know, I never talk like this because I don't like to burn bridges, but, you know, the whole major label shit is like a Ponzi scheme to me. Mm-hmm. It's more like, the math is funny.
Yeah,
I'm saying if you went out right now and I told you, yo, I'm gonna give you 10 glasses, 10 pairs of shades, stand in the corner and sell the 10 pairs of shades, each one for $10 a shade. And I tell you, you make 8 cents out of that. Are you gonna really stand out there for 8 hours, 12 hours selling this shit to make 8 cents? So now you use your creativity, you use your passion, you make the music. You promote the music, you do this and that, and you get 8 cents while the record label is getting $9.92 that we see. We don't even know the shit they pressing somewhere else or whatever the case may be. So the shit is like a Ponzi scheme to me. So it's fun while it lasted. I mean, the record labels are like enablers. Mm-hmm. And so they take you and they baby you and then they throw you in the street. When they think you're not worth no more, throw you in the street.
Swiss Beatz said something that I'll never forget. He said, you know, he went to Harvard for like that 6 week program.
Yeah, he
thing.
In school, yep.
And he said one of the things that they taught him in Harvard was like that give somebody don't treat them like they work for you. Make them feel like they're your partner and they'll work harder. So he was like he related that to the music business where it's like he's seen like a lot of guys get record labels, but really they're not really running the record label. But in their mind, the perception is better than reality. So they can feel like, yo, I got this label. I'm signing these artists. But it all comes back to the top dude.
It's all a predatory business. They take young black people and young Spanish people who grew up with no money, single parent homes, if that, that are talented, make music from the soul, and they know that these guys ain't educated. The lawyers that's representing us artists are their friends that went to school with them, brother-in-laws in some cases. And the whole shit is predatory. The whole shit, the whole time is like, and so it's a lot of you motherfuckers out there. It's a lot of crooks out there that's real smart. See, I never got robbed by a guy with a gun. I always got robbed by a guy with a smile and a bow tie who talk a little smarter than me, who had a big, better, what could you say, vocabulary than me. And we think because they look like us or they went somewhere and they smart, they could represent us. And those are the guys who rob you. So the record labels ain't no different. So these people get next to you and they befriend you and they figure out the whole time they talking to you and having these meetings with you, they realizing they trying to figure out what you do know and you don't know. And when they figure out what you don't know, that's where they figure out where to rob you from because you're never going to find out. You don't even know about it. And so, you know, a lot of that takes place in the business.
I told Joe Button the other day, shout out to Joe, you have to be educated even to ask a question.
Yeah.
You have to have a little bit of education to even ask a question. A lot of times with us, we're not even in a position to ask a question.
We don't know.
Because our level of education is so low, you're not even educated enough to ask a question.
Well, that's where we go back into entrepreneurialism. That's where we go back to business is business. So what happened to me is I've been in the streets since I was 14 years old. So I left, you got to understand, everybody says that. I don't know how true their story is. I was 14 years old in the streets, a baby. My daughter's 14. And she called me today, FaceTime, Dad, you don't love me. That's the type of shit you talk to a 14-year-old. I'm 14 years old, selling drugs, living in crackhead hotels. Had to figure out. I go to 145th and Broadway, buy $50 worth of crack cocaine, come back in the cab, cut the shit up. Make $100 profit to buy a pair of sneakers, go back over there with the $50, do this shit 3-4 times a day, risking my life, risking everything. 14 years old, living in crackhead hotels, where they busting people's heads open with 40-ounce bottles of, I'm opening the door and they're shooting heroin in front of me. You know, so it's too much for a 14-year-old. So I came in doing the business. And so I got really big at that business. Like really, really, I'm not proud of it, but like really, really big. So I always was an entrepreneur and always looking to expand and do my thing. So when I got in the music business, I always came in with the entrepreneurialism.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I shot the movie Night School and thank God that they picked me for the movie, Kevin Hart and
Tiffany Haddish.
Yeah, Tiffany Haddish and my man Will Packer. But the whole time I was there, I didn't like it because I enjoyed the acting. I enjoyed being with my peers and learning from them. But the whole time I was like, yo, I don't own this shit. Mm. And so I went and sold the movie to Warner Brothers recently. Kato movie.
Yeah, we got.
So I'm not like nah. I'm not. I'm that's me. I'm that, yeah. Like I'm trying to figure out how to own the shit, how to go in there. And you know, I'm not the smartest. I'm not that. But that's just always been my mentality. So I go into Relativity Records. It's 10 Jewish dudes, and I'm sitting in there, and they start using fancy words. And within an hour, I start realizing, oh, they mean this, they mean that, they mean this, they mean that. Because you know, you got to buy the work. Cut it up. You got to promote it. You got to give samples out. We used to do something when we hustle. And I, look, not proud about this, guys, but I'm just telling you my
story. Why you think the BX name him Cook Coke?
Somehow the rap game reminds me of the crack game, right?
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Walk down the street and go sample when I got a new batch of fresh product.
Like in. The ice cream truck.
Real talk. So I would go sample and I would have maybe like $300 worth of dope. And the dope fiends will follow me, and I give it to them, and I ask them, is it good? Is it a 9? Is it a 10? What's the count? How does it feel? How's it coming down?
Those are the analytics.
Yeah, I never got analytics.
Analytics. Take the analytics.
And I'm more
customer rating.
Oh, good shit. And we out. You know what I'm saying? And, and so we had to market promote. They knew the new package was in. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So when I get up in the music business, I know what the fuck they talking about. I'm sitting there like, oh. They talking about samples. You got to get my promo CD. Yeah,
we talk about that all the time. It's like, yo, if we just shifted the same disciplines in other mediums, we could be super successful, right? We talk about that with Trap. It was like, yo, he's saying, yo, dope game just like the Wall Street game. Like, it's the same disciplines.
It's all parables.
You know what I'm saying? If you've learned it there, you can apply it somewhere else. And so, like, you saying it.
So I've met billionaires, okay? This is what I was going to try to do. It ain't about Harvard. It ain't about Harvard. It ain't about an education. I'm being real with you. Should you have people with that education around you to protect you and talk the language you don't know how to talk? But I met so many billionaires that they just have that it. They have that niche. So I met a guy. I know a guy. He's beyond a billionaire. He owned this spot in Miami. I don't want to tell his business like that, but he owned a spot in Miami where they made cooking gowns, like your grandmother batas. They call batas. So over here's a lot of Latinos. So you know how your grandmother used to cook in the thing with the long
like the
dress?
Apron.
The apron shit. Yeah. Not an apron, but the dress.
Okay.
And when she cook on Sunday, Saturday, soul food cooking, they all got them, right? He made that, right? He made a store doing that. Old people behind the thing. He learned business through there. Next thing you know, the next store, they own a perfume thing. He wound up buying that business. So he's selling the perfume thing. Now he figures out where they sell it in the factory in Switzerland or whatever. And then next thing you know, he started just buying companies off of know-how and flipping them and selling them. And now he's a billionaire. He never went to Harvard. He never went to none of that shit. He just learned how to play this game and kept flipping it. And now they look at him like he's the greatest genius you ever seen in life. He don't talk the same language as these people, but he gets shit done. You know, I got another friend. She owns a company called A Latina. It's called It's a 10 Hair Products. She was a beautician. She was doing girls' hairs. She ain't like the product she was using. She invented her own shampoo. They call it Liquid Gold. Shit blew out of control. She makes $400 million. So it's not about Harvard or Yale or none of that shit. Yeah, it's about
that's a fact. What Mickey Fast
you tells. Smart, you smart.
Yeah, that's what we say all the time. It's about the education that you get outside of school.
Exactly.
Listen to 50 Cent is the new Aaron Spelling.
Why not?
50 Cent got like 20 shows on TV, bro. and he's from the projects in Southside, Jamaica, Queens. He just knew business. He got in there, he studied the business, and he applied the shit from the street in this. And as long as, because the hardest thing is, and tonight on my show, I got Lee Daniels.
Yeah.
And I watched a couple of interviews of his. And he keeps saying, because they wouldn't let us in, because they wouldn't let us in. And that's the point. The point is a lot of people have ideas, creative ideas. Who can actually make them happen? You know, who can get in there when they say they won't let us in?
That's what's up. Let me ask you this. As far as diversifying, so I never forget when you licked the sneakers.
Oh, my God.
That was
God.
A legendary moment.
MTV Cribs.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
It was the Jordans. What Jordans was it?
It didn't matter.
Barcelona's.
Yeah. So you licked the sneakers. So obviously everybody knows that you've been a sneakerhead for a long time. And I believe you had a sneaker store when you was a teenager. Mm-hmm. But now that's come full circle where you got Up NYC. Talk about that.
It's a brand you can trust, baby. We the biggest for our Latino and the black community, period, in New York City. So, you know, our kids always got to seem to be going all the way downtown to get the fly sneakers or get the fly shit. You walk in the stores in our hood, there's fucking rust leaking off the ceiling. You know, they treat us like, you know, we ain't shit. Yet and still, they make enough money to go live in Alpine and Tenafly and mansions and shit like that off of our hood, right? So it was a natural progression saying that I love sneakers so much and I'm a sneaker, you know, collector. But to open up back in our community and show people, a lot of artists, they get up and they run away.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we never see them again. You know what I'm saying? And that's not what Fat Joe has ever been about. So to open back up, and like you said, it is a major key, making everybody your partner. You know what I'm saying? You go to my store now, you see the guy behind the counter, he got a Rolex on like your shit. I'm telling you the truth. Go in there. Y'all from New York, walk in there.
Yeah.
They got Rolexes on. They got Benz outside. Look like they trapped.
Marble floors.
No, because marble floor because
yeah.
I got to make sure they don't steal from me.
Yeah, that's right.
You got to take care of them enough
and
make them feel like this is yours so they won't steal from me.
You don't feed the wolves, they're going to put you on a menu.
That's that. You don't feed the wolves, they're going to put you on a menu. I ain't never hear it like that, but that is a fact. And so that's what I do. I make sure everybody happy.
Yeah.
And when it's my birthday, they buy me shit. Like, they chipped in for this watch for me. Some of them.
It's called a chandelier.
Call a chandelier.
You can't call it a watch, though.
It's called a chandelier.
So what's the vision for it? Because we interviewed Killer Mike, and he was like, his vision for his barbershops is to, like, franchise it and have, like, a barbershop in every major city. Is your vision to have it like a, what's the sneaker store?
Yeah, I want to open
Fight
up
Club?
Like a
Fight Club.
Like not Fight Club because they resell.
Okay.
So oh, yeah,
they're
yeah.
They're actually smarter than me. So let's get the concept going.
But I don't know. I don't think so, right? Because there are people. I'm a sneakerhead myself, but it's like, yo, sometimes you just want the sneaker. Like, these people
they Uberized the sneaker.
Right.
So what they do is they rent the spot and they tell you, yo, bring the sneaker. I'm going to get 20% if I sell it for whatever you want to sell it for. And if you say, yo, I want $1,000 for that sneaker, they get their $200 off the sale. They never had to buy the sneaker.
Mm-hmm.
They never owned the sneaker. They just making PC. They like the house. Like if it's a gambling spot.
Yeah, yeah.
Low inventory, and low cost operation.
So with me, it's different. With us, we got accounts, Jordan, Nike accounts and stuff like that. So we got to play by the rules.
Yeah.
We can't resell. We can't sell more than the box. We can't, which we're grateful. But the answer to you is I want to open up about 10 of them. Like I'm actually moving back to New York right now. I'm in the process.
Full time.
Right. So just totally focus on my sneaker stores and a side business. I want to open up a fun business. See, me, I'm not scared.
Yeah.
Right. So now anybody who watches your show, they probably done heard the smartest people come in here and talk. Me, you could call me dumb because I'm like Bugsy Siegel. I will go to the desert and build Vegas. I don't give a fuck. If I lose, I lose. Yeah. If I win, hey, we geniuses.
Ace of spades.
That's me. I'm not scared of money.
Yeah.
I'm not scared of money. I'm not scared of money. So with me, I want to open a business. I don't know if I should talk about it, but it's going to be personal. And I'm going to work there. I'm going to work at the shop.
You're going to work at?
I'm going to run the shop.
Mm.
In New York City, I'm going to run the shop.
You like on some day-to-day vibe?
Some day-to-day vibe.
So you come in.
I want to open up. You know, I'm pre-diabetic. I've been diabetic since I was 14. Mm. I want to open up a bakery that's strictly for diabetics.
Mm.
No sugar, low sugar, for the kids that are struggling with weight issues. People who are healthy, who want stuff like that. There's never been a bakery where it's actually tastes delicious. And you get, you know, and that, now they got monk fruit sugar. They got all different types of
we should connect,
artificial flavors.
We should connect him with.
Please do.
So Jay-Z invested in this company.
Oh, my gosh.
And I forgot the woman's name. We interviewed her, too. But her kid had a food
allergy. Yep.
She quit her corporate job where she was making a nice amount of money. And she started a line of cookies.
Yeah.
And it has like the non-allergetic thing, the vegan thing, the no all of that.
The type of thing I'm going to do, but I'm going to do it for pretty much low sugar intake, close to no sugar, low sugar, but tastes delicious. And I want to work there.
Yeah.
I want to be behind the counter with the little fucking
the chef hat.
And I'm in there.
Chef Boyard Joe.
And they think I'm crazy. Khaled thinks I'm crazy. Everybody thinks I'm crazy. I'm like, okay, go to Fat Joe Sugar Free. You know what I'm saying? And I'm behind that counter. You're going to see. And it's going to change the game because at the end of the day, you know, the health crisis in America, especially in the Black and Latino community, has a lot to deal with sugar issues.
Your diet.
So we got to start educating them and make stuff that's tasty so that I know if I have that option, you know, I would prefer that rather than, you know, fucking myself up.
I feel like you've done that, man, especially in the health side. It was used to be Fat Joe. Now it's like, yeah, we just got to call him Joe. He's lost so much weight.
Flacco.
Yeah.
I got to be Flacco. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Because
I feel like you've always given back. So you said that you want to do that for the kids. But I heard the story where you did that with the sneakers too. It was your love for sneakers and your love for kids. And you said, you know what? I'm going to go back to the schools in the Bronx. And as an incentive for them to improve their grades, as an incentive to improve behavior, I'm giving sneakers to the entire school. So how did that go?
Sneakers to the class, the number one class who improved in reading, grades, and behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And tardiness, right?
That's a big one.
And so, yo, the bullies became the geniuses. The bullies in the school, the kids that was the biggest problem, this, that. Man, I went up in there and we did it to, what, like 10 schools or something with Ruben Diaz Jr., the Bronx Pro president.
Yep.
And when you see the guys that won, and these guys as bullies, they start crying. I used to come in and start with people, and now I love my classmates, and I'm so proud of my class. And I knew that if you, because I had, like I told you, I came up real, real tough. And I had you told Fat Joey from Forest Projects, it was a chance he could have won some Jordan sneakers, but I'd have been A-plus student. You know what I'm saying? So it really, really, the empirical data was incredible. The grades shot up, to just everybody competed for it. Mm. Unfortunately, I couldn't give it to every kid in the school.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because it would be too expensive, but it was really, really great.
Yeah.
And what we do a lot is we constantly giving back.
Right.
Like, I mean, like, constantly giving back. You know, the Thanksgivings, not the Thanksgivings, the Christmas, 1,000 families, groceries. I'm not talking about just the groceries for the thing. We try to do as much as we can. You know, COVID-19 hit our community bad. The kids couldn't go to school, so they needed laptops. We bought tons of laptops and donated it to the schools. Shit we don't even talk about.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Because I'm blessed.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? We all blessed. You know, when we can wake up and eat lobster or steak if we want, you really blessed. So we like to give back as much as we can to our community. So it's almost become, my stores have almost become a hub to how you can get in touch with Fat Joe.
Hello.
See if you get them to donate some shit.
In a few years, they'll know exactly where to go.
Yeah. They'd be like, you know, yo, what's going in, yo? Tell the big man, yo, I got some shit I got to talk to him about. Some autistic kids. I know his son is autistic. And they work that shit, and then they wind up getting a meeting with me, and we wind up donating shit.
That's a beautiful,
you know?
That's a beautiful thing, man.
Let me ask you this. Two questions about rap. How important is it to diversify? We talk about multiple streams of income a lot, right? But your rap, I mean, you're blessed 30 years in the game. I feel like rap is like football. The average rapper's career is like 3 years. Yeah, running back in football is like 3 years, right? So you're getting money for a short period of time, but now when it stops, it's over. This is why a lot of athletes go broke, because it's like no matter even if you make $10 million, mm-hmm. you're living like you make $10 million, which is cool while you're making $10 million, yeah. But then you go from making $10 million to zero. So how important is that to diversify and have other stuff going?
First of all, you got to believe it. You got to live in your truth. You got to believe it. You got to live in your reality. And so it's hard for us because we realize I went broke three times. You know, millions after getting millions. You know, $10 million broke. $4 million broke.
How'd that happen?
Wait, yeah, because
falling, nigga. Like,
get it,
said,
bring me up.
The chandelier.
More bottles. More bottles.
You think this
I'm saying after the first time. You wasn't like, all right, a hard stop?
Bro, I walked out that bank. My asshole was so tight. My head felt like you beat me to death with this fucking mic. I was like a dolphin with a hole in my head. Shit was different. That shit was buzzing. Like, Lady was like, oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Cartagena. Because I used to go there every day for like 50,000 cash. Every day in the bank. Give me 50,000 cash. Give me 30,000 cash. Give me 50,000 cash. You think you can't run out of that shit. And one day I went there, I'll never forget, it was across the street from Yankee Stadium, that bank, that Chase. She said, must be a problem. Money in here, Mr. Carter. Gina, this, I was like, I walked out of there, I was like.
I'm about to pass out.
and I had to go back at it. And I remember I got on my knees and I prayed to God every day. Like on the knees.
Like negotiating. If you just one more time.
I'll never do it again.
I won't do this again.
On the knees, man.
The God negotiation.
Not just praying. You know, you can pray anywhere. But on the knees, staring at the Jesus poster. Like, please, God. Please don't let me go out like that. And from the drug game to any other game, I watch people have runs and have their money and then lose it. Then be like, yeah, he used to have it. You know what I'm saying? And unfortunately, the only thing people seem to respect is the bag that you got money. It's the only difference of Fat Joe walking in here than another old school rapper that came out with Joe is missing his front teeth. When Joe come in here, he smell good. He still fly. He got the bag. Respect this man. Let's talk about this.
Respect the bag.
So gotta respect the bag.
What's the catalyst that brings you back? At that time, each time, is it like, yo, lean back? Take me out of here. I feel like you are consistent with like, yo, you're going to give us an anthem.
But that's not easy, bro.
I know. We don't see it. We don't see it.
I tell people it's lucky. That's unfortunate.
Yeah.
That's unfortunate because to have one hit record is a miracle.
That's a fact.
Fucking miracle. Yeah, I always say I'd rather be a one hit wonder than a no hit wonder. Like at least... Oh, you got a hit, you walk the red carpet, you see your favorite, might even fuck one of the most famous R&B chicks or something.
If you're
lucky.
Who knows?
You get money, then you run out of, it is, but you did it.
Yeah.
Right? And then another thing to rap forever and never get a hit. And so, but to constantly do it over and over and over and over and over again.
Ray, that song that you got right now is my favorite song out right now. I've said it several times.
You got another one.
That vibe, yeah. So it's like, but.
So that's quarantine music. That's D Nice. That's
It's a mashup. It started as a mashup, right?
It started as a mashup with the young Amorphous kid.
DJs. Yep.
Fucking incredible.
18.
Genius. And the way he mixes his shit is adequate. I don't want to overhype him. He's nasty.
He told me. I didn't know about him.
Yeah, oh, no.
It's different. He must have a program where he's studying the beats per minute because the way it blends sounds like, yo, that should have been the record.
Yeah.
Now, how do you get that sample? Because that's like Rihanna sample. It's right, a Luther sample.
You, so that's business. Like, exactly. So Dre heard him. And Dre was like, yo, you will not fucking believe this. I was like, what you saying? I was in the Bahamas on vacation. He was like, yo, I want to send you some shit. So he sends you a clip of the kid playing the music.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, what the fuck? That shit is crazy. And then Dre calls me back. He said, yo, I'm going to produce that shit. It's one thing to DJ.
Yeah.
It's another thing to produce. The snare, the this, the that,
right.
The right loop, the right, you know, produce. So Dre produced it. And I was like, yo, this shit is crazy. So then we got back from vacation and we did it in Cali Studio. So now Cali Studio is different. Cali Studio got palm trees. They give you cappuccinos while you're recording. Nah, it's a movie. Smells like $1 billion. You're looking at water and shit. Like, it's different. So Khaled's in there with me. Dre's in there with me. And we actually wrote the song together. Like, and we, the last time we did that was Lean Back.
Oh.
The very last time DJ Khaled, Kool & Dre sat down and plotted on a record was Lean Back. You know, because after that, Khaled got his career. I do my thing. They do their thing. The last time we collaborated and plotted was Lean Back. So we up in there and Khaled comes back with, well, back to take those. You're rolling in the sky. My guys to take those. I'm like, oh, shit, Khaled.
So, oh, Khaled made that?
Yeah, he came up with that one line. Back to take those.
So you're rolling in the sky. My guys to take those. That's take hard because that's the big play. Yeah. Throw your rollies in the sky.
Yeah.
Yo, so, side to side.
So we was like in the zone. And that he's down as a writer.
Oh, that's how I didn't know that.
So that's hard.
He came up with that line. He came up with that
that's
line.
Hard.
So I go, boom. So we up in there and we do it. Then I call a kid. I DM the kid. The kid calls me back. And we video it. And I'm like, yo, he's like, yo, what's up? I said, I seen what you've been doing, this, that. Then I play it for him. I said, listen, we're going to give you the look. We're going to be for the video. You're going to be in as a writer, a publisher. You're going to get paid. Like, you know, come on, man.
We take care of everybody. Take care of everybody.
He's my partner now.
Yeah.
Now you know him. His following with the young kids, he's going crazy out there with the young kids. The young kids is reposting the shit, this, that, because they said, yo, they ain't fuck him.
Yeah.
They ain't fuck him. That's what I mean by partnership. Everybody together win. We all got to win. I learned that from the Billies. I learned that from the billionaires. Everybody got to win.
Yeah.
Everybody, you cannot win on your own, bro. It just won't happen. Everybody got to win. And us, we like to be like little kids that, when you play with the boy, you me.
Yeah.
Me. Nah, B, you got to pass that shit on, man.
I mean, you do that effortlessly. Your relationship with Khaled, we can see it, obviously. Kool & Dre, we can see that. So we got the Rihanna thing cleared.
What time you
got
to do that call?
Now.
I was just going to
say. Oh, well, the Rihanna thing.
We got that cleared.
And Luther.
Yeah, that's what
Luther
I'm saying.
Luther don't clear either.
Exactly. So how did that go?
You know, Luther's my idol, man. Luther's my favorite singer of all time. And I do believe because I sent those vibrations out my whole life. So I've done like big interviews, bro, like MTV Awards, whatever, like big shit. You can Google it. I've always put them even before Michael Jackson. The last thing I'm thinking is his family is seeing this. And the Fat Joe's a big figure. So I'm thinking they seeing this because they don't clear.
Right.
So then when the sample guy goes to them and says, yo, we got a sample. They're like, well, you know, we don't really clear, but who's it for? And then he was like, it's for Fat Joe. They said, oh, we want to do this.
Good karma.
The light.
Good
karma. They like, no, we Fat Joe. They was like, we want to do this. And then they had known about the amorphous mashup. And they was like, we love that little kid too. And Joe's doing it with the kid. And then, yeah. And then, is Rihanna going to clear this? And that was like, and then it was just, she cleared it. It wasn't a problem.
No problem.
That's it.
And she sent the message. She sent a message to my publisher. He said, they said they cleared it. And she wants you to know she loves Fat Joe.
Everybody loves Joey Crack.
And I love Rihanna, bro.
Everybody loves Rihanna.
Sheesh.
Yeah, that kid going to make a killing, bro.
How's everybody doing?
Uh-oh. I get my man Joey on here.
It's the big show, man. What's going on, baby? How's my family doing out there? Well, listen, let me tell you, man, I appreciate y'all, what y'all done for me my whole entire life. You know, I'm indebted to y'all. You guys have always supported me. Kobe, you gave me my first show ever, Flo Joe. In Camden. I know we don't want to bore people with the story, but my first show ever was you. You know, I love you. We are family. And you know, I got this new song out, and all I'm trying to do is uplift the people and bring the light out and make people have a fun time. You know, we lost a lot of people. You know, a lot of people are depressed. They lost their jobs. And all I try to do is make a song. This is the first song I have ever made to just really bring joy in people's lives.
Biggest in the game. So
in the business in action.
So So that what just happened, the interlude. What? All right. Tell us what just happened, because that was dope to actually witness that.
Yeah, all right. It's different radio groups. There's Radio 1. Is one, and then we got Doc Winters, and they, so, you know, they own like 30, 40 radio stations.
Like Clear Channel?
Clear Channel. Clear Channel is a little bit
smaller, right?
Smaller. Okay. But it's big like that too. Clear Channel was big. And then, and so that was the call before, you know, every week they add new records to radio. So that was the call with like maybe 20 program directors. These are the guys who pretty much are the Wizard of Oz. They pick the records that's going to get played. So every artist goes and makes a plea to them and tell them what their music's about and could you support us? And sometimes they support, sometimes they don't. But, you know, Fat Joe's always been active. And COVID, I can't do it. But, you know, I think I'm one of the only artists that's been around as long as me and has been as successful as me that still gets on the road and goes do promo tour and goes to every little milk and cranny radio station. It's crazy because when I talk to him, I just talked to a PD program director from Providence, Rhode Island, 2 days ago. He does Rhythmic. And he was like, Joe, you know, you always come in here. And I'm talking to him. I visualize the radio station in Providence. He's like, you always get a Diet Pepsi right there in that first machine. And then you come. And I'm like, yeah, man. And you know, but that is part of it. You know, kissing babies, going around, you know, and knowing everybody from the mailman to the boss. Mm. And that's where some people mess up because, you know, and that's when you move out with the regime. This is all about business. Regimes means if somebody's the boss and you walk past everybody, you think your shit don't stink. You up there and you in with the boss. And the boss is the boss for 5 years, 10 years, and you sit in the plush couch. When they fire that guy, you go with him. Mm. You're done.
So that's like when when he was like, Puerto Rico, 3 days, poly with the PDs. Now they got my shit on replay.
Yeah. That's exactly what he meant. He went out there, everybody, whoever you name, Beyonce, anybody. Like, you know, we need these guys. You know what I mean? The way you get more streams, you generate more money, more fame, popularity, the song blows up. It is through these guys playing your music. So, you know, you got to, you know, smart artists, politic with them. The difference with the young artists now, they're more streaming artists as to radio artists. So they feel like they don't have to have a relationship with these radio guys or whatever. They just put their music out.
Let it go.
And it streams. You know, I believe in networking and any business you in. And you basically as good as your last relationship.
Mm. So you talk about this a lot, about the diversification of your career. You said it's like a pizza pie. So you had managing careers. You were obviously the executive. You started acting a little bit. Hopefully we're going to see more of that. And then obviously the sneaker stores. But touring has been obviously with COVID out of the mix. And so you become a huge. I mean, you were obviously Joe Crap before, but like on Instagram.
Tell them how big, man.
the big.
I love that shit.
The big show.
I'll never forget.
You know, I don't get high, guys. I only get high off of like accolades and you big me up. Yeah. I'm smoking crack.
I'm gonna let you finish, but I wanna just make because I used to play ball, so I'm a huge basketball fan.
Yes, let's do that.
And I never forget this is when the tournament on 145th was popping. What was the name? When Mousy started the tournament.
Tri-State.
So that's the first time I actually had seen him. And I already knew it was him because it was a Phantom. It's in the middle of Harlem. I already knew.
I wonder who that could be.
But I'll never forget the legendary Rucker situation. I was actually there for that. And with the Jay-Z situation.
Blackout.
And the blackout day. Well, the next day after the blackout. And I was.
What do you mean when I won the championship?
Championship, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Don't forget that part.
No, I was there.
I had to play to win the back championship.
Back to back. I was there. And.
Actually, seven championships. Yeah.
I was there, and Joe.
As a coach.
You know, at that, you know.
As a player, I sucked. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Joe was there, like 50 deep with the big TS chain. And, you know, Brooklyn was heavy there. Like, yeah. Brooklyn came heavy. And he was like, yo, Jay, da, da. He was like, where your man at? I'm here. Da, da, da.
Yo, he was out there, huh?
That was a legendary
moment.
That was
an ugly time. I got on the mic and started dissing him.
That guy you're referring to.
Nah, I say that to say, yeah, that was great times just to witness that. Because It was like, you see a lot of people you don't see in person. Like some people you might not ever see.
So what you were saying when Joe was acting like that, you said he's the real motherfucker. This guy's
right in the middle of it. No, right in the middle of it.
Right in the middle of the shit. Like, yo, what's up? Let's go.
Cut from that. Yeah, cut from
that. I think that I'm not the real. No, I'm not the real. Yeah, I'm here. What's up?
That's a fact.
And so I know Brooklyn got mad at me that day. They were like, this motherfucker out here flexing for real. And I was just really offended, you know, because I was like, you know, I had pretty much revitalized the Rucker.
Mm-hmm.
The Rucker had fell off for a couple of years, so I started putting in, you know, and it was bad business 101 if you are an artist watching. I loved the Rucker so much and coaching the kids out there that I wouldn't do no shows in the summer. Meanwhile, What's Love is number one in the world. And they offer me $150,000 to do a show and tours. And I'm like, nah, I got a coach.
Got a game.
At the Rucker.
And Steph coming too.
Yeah, Steph coming every game. So it's like, so I'm like, you know, I was out there and I put my heart into rebuilding this thing. And then here comes Jay-Z. And Jay-Z, he win everything.
He
got
time.
The most beautiful chick in the world. He got, yeah, this guy just can't fucking lose, right? So he coming up in there, he had to know when he was coming in the Rucker it was going to be a Fat Joe Jay-Z situation. Plus we had unspeakable things in the past.
Yeah, yeah, it's a history.
Right? Yep. It was a big history, mm-hmm. And then it all calmed down, and then he comes to the Rucker. So I'm like, I'm still young, I'm still on my bullshit, you know, and so he's coming in. I win the game and he got the next game. He's walking in. It's fucking Beyonce walking right by me. I'm like, what the fuck? Diddy's dancing in the middle of the crowd. I'm like, this motherfucker came to take my shit. Straight up. I'm like, he came to take my shit.
Yeah.
I had this shit on lock. Right? And, it, you know, once he come in, I'll tell you something that happened to me that day that I had never seen. I was the king of the Rucker. I brought it back. Allen Iverson, Stephon Marbury. Whoever was that, whoever you thought of, I brought him out there. I brought this whole shit up. When I walked in that park that day, I seen a bunch of motherfuckers go like this.
I was dead. That's what I said. I was dead.
I never seen some people turn their back on me so fast.
I was there. And I remember you got mad. He was like, where your man at? He was like, Brooklyn. He's like, where your man at?
Brooklyn motherfuckers was waiting.
Legendary moment. Because you was on the radio.
Right after.
The night before.
I felt he came up there with
Angie. It was the night before.
That made
Flex
it even worse.
And Jay. They was on the phone call. And I think OG won. And they was on the phone
OG
call.
OG won. Flex, Jay, Steve
and Shaq.
Stout.
And Shaq called.
Shaq called. Them.
Talking crazy.
But Shaq was lying. Because he wasn't there. And so I interviewed him recently for the Big Big Show. And I said, yo, Shaq, man, how could you go against me? He said, I'm going to tell you the truth. I was not there. I was not going to play against you. Now, if Shaq wasn't there, we would have won that game. They had LeBron if he was coming, but he was straight out of high school. I had Carmelo.
They had Lou Flores. No, I'm a basketball fan. Like, I know.
Was LeBron with y'all? Because I heard
LeBron was with them.
With them, yeah.
Because my man
straight out of high school.
My man, Francisco Garcia. Shout out to Francisco.
Yeah,
Louisville.
I know who they had. They had Sebastian Telfer. They had Bron. They didn't have it. He had a way better team.
Don't forget Bron.
LeBron wasn't there.
I'm saying that's who was supposed to be.
But I'm saying the people that was physically there.
You had Al Harrington.
I had Al
Stephon Marbury.
Stephon Marbury.
A Butter.
In the shout out my brother A Butter. In the hotel room on 57th Street, I had AI and Mike Bibby.
Ooh. That's your guy.
This is when they both was, you know.
Yeah.
the biggest,
yeah.
right? So they was down there waiting for me. So I was going to bring them in at halftime, AI and Mike Bibby, just to fuck the park up. Straight Hamilton. You know what I'm saying? Coming to halftime, AI, Mike Bibby. We had Zach Randolph. We had Steph. We had Al Harrington.
Al Harrington. He was there in the warm-up line.
Carmelo was on standby. He was coming too. I mean, we smashing him.
Real dumb.
Way around it.
Real dumb.
And my regular team, you know, Rayford Alston, A Butter, Kareem
Reed.
You know, we had the boys out there.
Kareem Reed, he's the longest tenure person that played with you?
Yeah, in fact, Joe would have never won a chip without Kareem.
You're not putting the team in Dykeman? His biggest.
I'll get to that. His IQ was smarter than everybody. So what I learned about basketball players is you could get the best physical guy could jump to the moon and back. But if they dumb, when the chip is on the line, they gonna fuck it up. They gonna stink it up. Now, you can get somebody who's very, 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 very talented. And if they're smart,
yeah.
Kobe was smart. You know, smart players. If they smart, Chris Paul, shit like that. They make the right play at the end to win the chip.
LeBron.
How are they LeBron. When you're... Because I'm not imagining now. I'm like in the huddle in my mind. Like, when you're coaching these professionals, like, what's... Like, they're like, all right, Joe, we got you.
No, they know I'm not playing.
Ooh.
I take this serious.
Yeah.
You can see it. My veins pop out. My head over here. They know I'm... They know I'm worse than their coach. Because their coach... The coach looks at them like, yo, this guy's worth $100 million. What the fuck I'm telling them? No, Fat Joe screaming on me. Yo, don't come here. If you want to be pussy, you take that shit to the bar, nigga. This. No, I'm going crazy. And then one day, J.R. Smith came out there, played against us. He might have scored 15 points in a row. Like, he was
cooking.
This is when he was on one. And I ain't going to lie. I was in the huddle, and I love J.R. Smith. I was like, hurt that nigga.
And they,
they were like, yo, what do you mean?
Hurdy's revenge.
Hurdy's revenge. Nigga. He come up in there. They hit that boy about 3-4 times. The rest of the game, he was shooting 3-pointers. He ain't never come to that basket again. I was like, fuck that. Hit him. He got to feel that motherfucker. Then we had my brother, Raul. I don't know if you know Raul. My brother, Raul, he wear the big TSJ. So Raul was a bruiser. He don't even know basketball. We sent him in there certain games where
just to hurt
he had to just hack a nigga. He'd come up in there. He'd be the only Puerto Rican on the team.
He'd come
up in there, the whole team start laughing like, oh, shit. Raul going in there to hurt a motherfucker.
We know what time it is.
He going to make a feel it. And one, but you going to feel that shit. They already know. Yo, why you throwing this nigga in there, man?
He's Rick Mahorn of the team.
Yeah. Bill Laimbeer.
Yeah. Both.
Yo, it's crazy. That is a fact, man. Raul, we used to throw a little. He had a big TS. We throw the jersey on him. Yo, go in there, Raul. Take the blunt out of his hand. Raul knew he had to hit a nigga about 3-4 times. Come back out. All right. They know to keep it, you know. You ain't doing all that shit against us.
So that was a great detour. So I wanted to get to what was going on now with the big show. Mm-hmm. Because it's like, it was a perfect time. And obviously everybody's home, everybody's on IG. And I'm trying to figure, what made you decide to say, you know what? I'm probably one of the greatest storytellers that this game's ever seen. I need to share these stories with the world via IG. What was that process like?
I've always been one of the greatest storytellers. And so when you get somebody like Kanye West calls me just to tell him stories in the studio.
Like, tell me a story. Kanye, different. Yo, Joe, tell me a story, please.
I need inspiration right now.
Pharrell used to call me to the studio just to be sitting there like yoga. Like, tell me a drug dealer story. Tell me y'all some shit over here about. I've always been behind the scenes the best, one of the best. So I give it three. I give Nori. I give Irv Gotti and I give Fat Joe.
Well, you know who we got throwing there? The best story that we've come across.
Personally, I thought you saw my music.
We've come across personally. Chris Gotti.
Same thing.
He's dynamic.
He's dynamic. Yeah, no, it's legendary.
No, he is legendary, but he's not better than Irv. Irv is the one.
Yeah, we ain't mean it.
Irv is the greatest. Chris is.
Yeah, he can.
Hours.
We talking Chris and Irv. Like, you know what I mean? So. Yeah, that family. So, you know, we always been the best storytellers. And I've always known that. I've had the ability to a 50 Cent just told me that the other day. I've always had the ability to, like, when I tell you something, you can actually see it. That's actually how I've always made my music, too. Because I always, my best friend is in jail for life, right? So I always made my music and wonder how he would, where would it take him in his cell? Like, he could turn on his headphones and he listen and he feel like he's there. You get what I'm saying? And that's how I've always done my stories. It's like, you know, just to take you there. Like, you where you could feel like, yo, I was really there. That shit crazy. He's explaining it. I could see the shit. You know what I'm saying? In your own mind. And the big, big show was, it was COVID. Really, really scared. You know, I'm pre-diabetic. The shit was just killing every fat dude in the world I knew. Every diabetic, everything scary. I'm stuck home. I wouldn't go outside. I would not go outside, right? And then one day I put on my live and I had fun, was talking shit. And then my daughter and Dre was like, yo, you need to go on again tomorrow. All right. And next thing I know, 3 days later, we had a show. We was like, yo, it's the big, big show. It's on every day at 8 o'clock. And we got sponsorship.
Right. So now that goes, the touring money now becomes sponsorship money in a sense.
Yeah, yeah. I might have made as much money as I made.
Let me think. Maybe, perhaps.
Perhaps.
I might have equaled my tour money without touring, staying home, just doing like the big, big show. And that has led it to other things. You know, we did Trilla, Wild Cherry Pepsi, a talent show. You know, it just led into all this, like, you know, people are like, oh, social media, he's, you know what I'm saying? So it
just led snowballed into
a bunch of bags.
And the people that watch you now, it's not like, yo, they know you from music. They know you from this. It's like, yo, this is the personality. This is a show.
It was always music. A big injustice, you know, to the fans. Because when I grew up, like you see in my lifestyle, I said, back then, when I wouldn't even pose for pictures.
When I said my lifestyle,
how many times I was around.
Never seen a brick, never seen a crack house.
You know how many times I've been next to Tupac and Biggie, and it was like the whack shit to ask for a pic? Like, and so everything at that time was about privacy. I would literally come, if I came in here years ago and they was having an event, I would stand in the corner because I didn't know y'all. Y'all would be like, yo, that's one me. And I would just sit there and just be like, it didn't allow us to be our true personality. And as years went by and through social media, everybody could open up and do a little something. It's, you know how many people just heard my music, but now they see the show and be like, damn, I ain't know this dude was there. That's yo crazy, man.
Yeah, that's a fact. Yeah.
This guy. Like,
been doing it for a minute.
Yeah. And it's so, and so it allows me to show you my real personality.
That's dope.
Joe,
that's dope.
Before we end it, I want to go on a teachable moment. That's a finance moment. It's an unfortunate moment, but I think people can learn from it. When you went to jail for a couple of months, and from my understanding, correct me if I'm wrong, that's finance related because I guess your CPA wasn't paying the taxes.
That was the one time I didn't do the crime. I've done many crimes. So what y'all want me to do? I'm not going to lie to you.
Yeah.
That's the one time I did not do the crime. It's the craziest shit in the world.
So what exactly happened?
I had an accountant. Every month I'm sending them wire transfers. Well, wire transfers from your bank account to them is a paper trail. I'm sending them money to pay my taxes and everything every month. You know, $25,000, $40,000, $25,000, big money. And one day I go to buy a car. And so I was more embarrassed than anything. So the guy from the car dealership was like, yo, are you sitting down? And I'm laughing. He's like, says here you haven't paid for none of your houses, your mortgages. Says here you haven't paid none of your car notes. Says here, I'm like, are you crazy? Like, are you nuts? So I call up the accountant. And when I call him up, he says, don't kill me. Don't kill me. I said, I never threatened you, bro. Don't kill me. I said, bro, I send you wire transfers every month. It's saying you ain't paying my shit. Like, are you fucking serious? Like, boom. So from that point, I had to go call Pitbull. Pitbull gave me his account right around here, who's still my account to this day. When I went there, it was like, yo, this is bad, yo. This man ain't pay your taxes in 2 years. And so we contacted the IRS and told them, yo, we have an accountant. We got the proof, the wire transfers. You know, we want to pay up to date. We alarmed them. And so the next day, it came to my house. I was in the studio with Corey Trey. And my wife calls me all nervous. She's like, yo, the feds are here. I'm like, the feds? You know, I don't know what they're there for, right? So I'm like, the feds? I was like, yo, put them on the phone. So the guy gets on the phone and says, yo, where you at? I said, what you mean where I'm at? Like, yeah, we want to talk to you. Where you at? I said, well, about what? He said, you know, these the taxes. I was like, oh, yeah, you know, we contacted you. You know, my accountant, we contacted you. He was like, no, this is criminal. So now I know.
Stop talking.
It's over.
Drop the phone.
Once he said it's criminal, I was like, yo. I said, you know what? I'm officer. I'm going to have my lawyer call you right after this. He was like, but where you at? I said, bro, you in my house, bro, with my family. I can't go nowhere. I'm Fat Joe. I'm famous. My lawyer call you. So my lawyer called him. Long story short, my lawyer met with them and showed them the wire transfers that the guy robbed me and didn't pay my shit. And they was like, hey, man, we believe Joe, as the leader of his household, is responsible for who he hires.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so instead of trying to really rock him, we're going to give him 2 misdemeanors, and he could get 2 years in jail or get probation. Press the luck. So I wind up having, I already gave this dude the money to pay. So I wind up paying these taxes again that I already paid before my court date. So I wind up paying $1,200,000 before I go see the judge.
Mm.
So now I know other people who had these problems that only got probation and never went to jail, whatever. So with the greatest letters you ever heard in your life, with the feds, you won't vouch for him in the feds. You won't. If you knew he was guilty, you'd be like, yo, bro, you on your own with the
God
shit.
God bless.
Nobody writes a letter for nobody in the feds. Nobody. They'd be like, yo, peace to the gods.
Peace to the gods. Yeah, yeah.
Peace to the gods. See when you get home, bro. Like,
I'm going
to
hold you down out here, bro.
Nah, yeah. Like, I ain't got shit to do with this. Because, you know, we all know that the feds, you get niggas hot. That's how it happens. You get me high, I get him high, he get him. Stay away, right? The letters they wrote for me, I never realized I had donated so much money to people. It was like, so there was a guy when he was in prison. His name is Terrence. When he was in prison, he noticed that parents and family could not see their kids, you know, due to they didn't have to travel with them. Long story short, I gave this guy a fucking a bus. Right? Aid Society, hundreds of thousands of hurricanes in fucking Santo Domingo and Haiti, hundreds of thousands. Like, and so all these people were writing letters on my behalf. Like, yo, this guy's the best. This guy gives back to the schools, computers, this guy, this. I don't know how I went to jail, bro. And so the lady was like, listen, you're a great guy. Actually, you're remarkable. And you should think, this is what she fucked me up at. But you can't really argue with the judge, right, when they're about to give you time. So she says, your new wealth should be found with your families and your friends. And my family was in there. My friends and family was in the courtroom like 300 deep. Like, they shut that bitch down. Khaled was in there. Everybody, you know, aunts and uncles. You know how you got them aunts and uncles that never leave that crib, that never leave that hood? They was in that motherfucker for me. My family was in there deep. Nigga mm-hmm. flew in from Florida. Them niggas was in there like, yo, boom. So she was like, I got to give you this time. And so they only gave me 4 months. But, and when I walked in there, because I had paid it off, they had gave me a penalty. So they said it was a penalty. There's no way. I couldn't cop out if I didn't take this penalty. The penalty was $1.2 million.
You paid $1.2 million in taxes,
2.4,
and then another $1.2 million in a penalty, and you already actually
not to mention $500,000 for the lawyer,
and not to mention
$150,000 for the forensic
money, the money that you already paid previously.
Yeah.
That you thought you actually paid. What happened with that? So he just robbed you? Just he was just taking the money and putting it in his bank account?
He turned into Bernie Madoff.
Oh. So Ponzi scheme.
So he wound up telling on a bunch of other motherfuckers that he was doing it with him. And he got away. Like, so, you know, I never heard about him. I never seen him again.
He didn't get jail time?
Nah, I don't think so. I don't even know. They just was like, you can't ask about him.
Oh, damn.
Because, you know, normally I think you could sue him.
Yeah.
They're like, nah, he's with us. You can't ask him.
Also, witness protection.
Yeah. And on top of the money that you lost for actually being incarcerated, you could have been outside making more revenue.
So when I come home from jail, because I pretty much do everything but sell my asshole to pay these people before I go to sentencing, mm-hmm. right? So when I do 4 months in jail, I come home, I'm working. Africa. Yugoslavia, Poland, China. There wasn't a stone unturned. They had a Fat Joe show, Philippines, like anywhere. I was going to get that bag because I'm not used to, you know, I'll tell you, I've been in the streets since I'm 14. I'm not used to my money being low. I'm not used to my family ever asking. One thing I can say, God bless, my family never realized that we had a problem.
Mm.
Wife was still getting Birkin bags. You know, my daughter was still going to private school. My son to private college. I was busting my ass to make sure everybody. So at the end of this year, so I do 4 months. When I go to the eight months later to do my taxes, they're like, congratulations, you had a hell of a year last year. You made $1.2 million. I said, made $1.2 million? I'm broke. What are y'all talking about? Yeah, you made $1.2 million. You just paid us. So now you gotta pay the half on that. So it's just like spiraling.
Yeah, that's crazy.
It never ending, never ever. And thank God when All the Way Up came out, it wasn't like I was all the way up. I made sure they was all the way up. So the first thing I do, I wasn't taking no money. I was just saving. Boom, came to them with that penalty. $1.2 million. Now I'm a free man. Now I'm a normal guy.
Now you're
a
free man. Yeah.
Leave me the fuck alone.
Yeah.
You know, and I've been great, thank God, ever since.
We can't end on that, though. Because, I mean, that story's crazy. But we got to end on something else you've been consistent in, and that's your fresh.
Oh, being fly?
I mean,
I've been fly since I'm 14.
By any means, you don't miss a day. I told you. Off.
Detroit Red cleaned up. Kanye got a lot of them balls.
I mean, I go in the stores and I'm just like, yo, man, there's no, where are you finding these sizes? How does Joey Crack
Shout
stay
out to
fresh?
My stylist, to Relish on Instagram. He also styles Khaled. And,
that's where we get these silk shirts, y'all.
you know, there's different ways, man. You know, I've been, you know, unfortunately, it's sad to say, but I used to hustle to buy sneakers and buy fly gear.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I came out in the era where everybody was really, really fly. And so we always been, you know what I'm saying, risking our lives to be fly. You know what I'm saying? And now that I'm legit and I make enough money to be fly, I be like, you know, you are literally going to walk to the casket saying, yo, this nigga was fly. And he don't play. And I don't got a problem. I blow the bag. See the outfits and the, no, I don't. Like, I told you.
Your
wife looked at the video. She said, that was a Birkin bag on my shirt.
She said, Troy,
that was Hermes silk.
That pink silk is different. I said, yo, I don't know where you're getting these clothes.
That's some Fendi shit. This linen, I got Hermes sneakers on. I'm like, I love it. I dress up for anything. During COVID, I was coming in downstairs to my house for the second floor to the first. I was coming down with the dip fresh for no reason.
That's Cam. Remember, he was like, my man on house arrest, get him fly. And he don't care. In the house, he's fresh. Like,
yo, I'm about to get some cereal. Let me get dressed.
Yo, just cause. Just to watch TV. Just to watch TV.
New York fresh.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Y'all, I wanted to welcome y'all to Miami and wear some Fendi, you know, linen shit because I'm in Miami. But, you know, New York, I know how to put on a pair of Timbs and some army fatigues and a fly hoodie.
It don't feel the same with this Miami breeze.
No,
just feel a little bit better.
And yesterday I painted graffiti. You know, I write graffiti. So graffiti writers wear sneakers that they know the paint is gonna get on. They wear clothes with paint already. Like they ain't messing up their fly.
You're an artist. You got
Fat Joe can fly
while you paint.
Fly the paint.
Screw it. That's different level. That's different level.
Suits with shit. Like, I'm up in there. They looking at me. I know they looking at me like I'm crazy. They're like, yo, this dude crazy, man. This guy. He too much, but I love it. I love it. And my whole crew fly. We care about being fly. You know, my stylist, he's like my brother. You know, my wife's best friend, and like my brother. And he's always fly. He should, there's a trick. Let me tell you business if you're watching. There's a trick. The stylist, they can give you the flyest shit, but when they come give it to you, they got some shit on to kill the shit they gave you. So you could always feel like, yo.
I got to get to that.
Yo, line. You get that, Terrell. Oh, God. So I'm going to tell you what I did for the video, how it got so fly, right? I said, yo, Terrell. And I picked out the
You can see it in your face. You like, I picked out the
silks. Yeah, but what happened was I told Terrell, I said, yo, Terrell, I need the outfit you're going to wear if you were going to a stylist's birthday party.
Mm-hmm. So style, you know, on sometimes a stylist.
Style
yeah. on a stylist.
Yeah, yeah, style
that's
on
a bar.
Stylist.
That's a bar. Style on a stylist.
Yeah, yeah, I might use that. Yo, that's it. But what I'm saying is, my brother Terrell, he'll go to a birthday party of another stylist and walk in there like a fucking alien, like floating with some purple
some
poochie
alligator.
Shit. Some shit. Yeah, he walks in there and then they're like, damn, this dude is too fly. I said, Terrell, that's how we got to look in the video. We got to look like we went to the stylist party and styled on that. And I'm glad you appreciate so the much. Fresh because yeah. I be thinking I spent a lot of money on gear. And I be thinking nobody noticed.
Oh, no.
My man Mike B. Shout out to Mike B. He talked to you today.
Mike B, my brother.
Yeah he's from our neighborhood.
Yeah, he just styled the coat.
Yeah.
For me.
Yeah.
Shout out to Mike B. That's ironic because he literally just posted a post.
He did what he said.
It was you wearing
that's that Dapper Dan.
Yeah.
That's when Dapper Dan was still illegal.
LL inspired.
That's when Dapper Dan first came home and he wasn't with Gucci yet.
Whew.
That freestyle?
Rap City the basis.
Freestyle?
Yeah, it's a swipe. It's a swipe. And then he did the LL. It was ULL. It's like a swipe, swipe, swipe.
Early in the morning, could barely feel my face, cutting that ron, hammer on my waist. My baby mama stressing. I'm like, get the fuck up out my face. Feds on my ass now. About to catch a case. I'm allergic to the bullshit. Woo!
The Big Show.
Yeah, that's the big show. Yo, I might have to repost that shit.
The light.
I love that.
Light. The light led to this.
The light.
Might be posted it in this can.
That's a fact.
Yo.
Joe, man, we want to thank you, brother. Thank you so much, for being gracious with your time.
Appreciate y'all, man.
What would you like to tell the people?
I like to tell them stay in the light. stay in the light, man. Stay positive and just know that your darkest moments bring your most clarity. You got to stay in the game. You never know. And so Business 101, I'll tell you, Dr. Dre lost Death Row Records. Mm. He was back at nothing. He went and found Eminem and 50 Cent. He might have made $50 million from that. Anybody, us, we would be happy with that. He stopped? No, he stood in the game. Going. You never know.
Beats by Dre.
He kept going and made the beats and made $1 billion.
Yeah.
So you got to stay in the game. You never know.
Mm-hmm.
You never know. That's a fact.
My graduates from my school being Forbes. Bag drop.
Bag drop.
A mic drop. Bag drop.
Bag drop.